You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, so today I have George Arabian on the line, and he is managing partner of Steelhead Ventures. George, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Adam.
I'm really excited to have you back on the show. It's been a couple of years since we've worked together. I just want to say, hey, welcome back on the show.
Well, thank you, Adam. Pleasure to be here. I know it was close to almost 5 years ago when we first started to engage with one another. And, my compliments to you to see the way you've grown the business and the way you've been able to make an impact for so many people.
Oh, man, George, means a lot coming from you. And thank you. I appreciate it. You were one of our early interviews on here. And I believe the platform may have even been called something different at that time. I think we were still under the banner of Money Matters Top Tips at that point for the rebrand into Mission Matters. So you're right. Time flies. Well, George, I guess we'll start this episode the way that we start them all. And we'll start that with our Mission Matters Minute. So, George, we at Mission Matters amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. George, what mission matters to you?
Well, I think what I really focused on, Adam, was the experience of having been in the technology sector for 30 years and to see the impact of truly a very easy statement to make, which is the power of team culture, but much more challenging to create that, particularly in early stage and growth stage startups. So that's the mission that I wrote about and I really believe in. And it's the power of team culture that I think enables a long-lasting company and members of a company to really work together through both the ups and downs of the various growth challenges that you have when you're an early stage or growth stage company.
That's great. And we're going to dive further into exactly how you're helping some of these companies with Steelhead Ventures. But before we do that, I don't want to assume that all of our new audience and new listeners have caught our original episode and worked together. So maybe let's start with your background. Like, tell me a little bit more about your history and how you got in the business.
Absolutely. Well, I was totally, in one way, unqualified from a technology degree point of view. I was a history and sociology major through college and eventually worked going to school at night to get an MBA. But I entered the technology sector as a individual salesperson, and I had a choice between various industries. But given the power of what was going on when I first entered the industry, which was the personal computer explosion, I said, that's really a bet that I want to make. And I was part of the first corporate resellers that were selling a large volume of PCs into the corporate environment. But what really transpired was timing was everything, because what I was about to witness was the growth of what became the internet, because the foundational components, which is certainly the computing and distributed computing, but more importantly, the infrastructure, including Wi-Fi, and then eventually the evolution of online media and the ability for software to actually create the websites that were part of the internet explosion. I was part of all that, and it kind of pulled me in. So my background was being part of the one of the early innovators in Wi-Fi, the commercialized Wi-Fi, and that was in the beginning of the very beginning of the internet, early 90s, and then was able to be brought on board. Visionary really helped create online media, which was a hybrid, both online and using CD-ROMs in those days. Long story short, we were rolled up into Steve Case and AOL, and was part of AOL through the mid-90s. And then I was quite fortunate to meet a group of Apple founders that came from Apple. They really had a vision around graphical interface and how to create, in a very compelling way, websites. And back then, those were innovations.
Yeah.
And that's what excited me. And that's what allowed me to leverage, if you will, my passion for history and set up global operations, typically in Asia and Europe, through various phases of growth that the companies I was part of back then. So that was the foundational component. Mm-hmm. And then over the years, really did a lot of transaction work. And over the last 10 years, was both an executive, but also evolved into making early stage investments with Steelhead Ventures, which was a partnership with actually a family member of my brother. And so we were very fortunate to make, as you know, by investing by itself is risky, but particularly early stage investments. Mm-hmm. And we were able to success in that starting really almost 8 years ago in creating Steelhead Ventures. So that gives you kind of a multiple hat, yes. Both an operating executive and investor. So anyway, sorry.
It's great. And I don't want to cut you off. And this is one of the reasons I was so excited when I heard that we finally got to you to get you into one of our books. I've been wanting to publish your work for a long time because, first off, just the amount of experience you have, what you've done, the time periods that you happen to be, you were in the middle of it all. Like, so what was it? Because for me, when I think AOL, when I think that, like, I was a kid. Like, I remember the, you know, you got mail. I remember all these things happening.
Yeah.
But I was seeing it from, like, a consumer standpoint. I had no idea what it was other than it was cool. Like, what was it like to be around that environment back then?
It was electric.
Yeah.
Had to be. It really was.
Had to be.
Because we didn't know what we didn't know back then.
Right? You're inventing it.
You know, I remember literally sitting, I was building a small team for a Wi-Fi company back then, and literally having these, you know, PhDs, scientists, they were actually scientists, screaming. And I go, what are they doing? Well, they had just figured out how to integrate an integrated circuit into a small, if you will, router. Mm-hmm. And they had figured out both combining chips. They were literally at soldering and how to do it. And to see normally fairly dry scientists and PhDs screaming and yelling and almost dancing that was the excitement when you're creating innovations that potentially could make an impact in the market that we did. And it was very similar to what was a company by the name of Meteor and what eventually got rolled up into AOL, I think was that amazing vision of founders that would look at a platform like America Online and not use it as a networking opportunity, but change it into a media play, which was innovative back then. So getting the content, the customer experience, and creating those innovations, it was electric. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah, you guys were the rock stars back then of like what was going on. Nobody knew it, right? Like this is before the tech entrepreneurs and all the other things that now make headlines. But you guys were the rock stars behind the scene. It's almost like you were Indian and nobody caught up to what was cool yet. Like that's the way I see it, because things were going on. The general population just didn't know.
Well, just to be, candid and transparent, I was on the front lines. You know, I was... not the founders. I didn't have that vision, but they saw in me someone that could help them grow the company because I was on the sales side and eventually sales management. So I adopted and was excited by the founders and the teams that were the very senior folks early on. And that really was the power of being able to take and articulate the vision, because the founders were so well, if you will, astute on how to communicate what's possible that didn't exist.
Yeah.
So that was the exciting part, to share whether it was web software in the case of NetObjects or AOL or whatever it was, or the commercial Wi-Fi. How do you articulate what's not possible today in a way that creates that excitement. And that's the fun part about, you know, being on the frontline sales, if you will, is sharing those visions, creating those relationships, and getting people that would not, if you will, have awareness of what's possible to give them enough confidence to say, you know, we do see that's possible. And that was the extraordinary part about founders back then, is they had the ability to articulate their vision in a compelling way. I hope that answers and gives you some.
Oh, it does. That and much more. It's amazing. It's amazing to document and to get a feel for, you know, what that was like. And really the budding, the burgeoning of the internet. Like, it's awesome. I want to switch focus a bit here. So let's spend a moment or two on now. Obviously, we have the upcoming book. I'm really excited to publish your work. We're not going to give the audience everything here. So I want to get a little teaser going on about some of the maybe the ideas that you plan to propose in the book. But just for everybody listening or watching this, we will be bringing George on again for a second part of this interview once the book is live, and we will do a deep dive into George's writing. But maybe, George, just give us a flavor of what you plan on presenting in the next upcoming book.
Well, again, I kind of alluded to it early on, was that particularly for startups, which happened to be the, if you will, the niche that I really was attracted to, rather than more of a corporate, if you will, even though I very often did deal with a lot of large corporate customers as customers, I was always on the early stage or growth stage startup side, right? And the real compelling part of that was the intangible quality of what it took to make those startups successful. And what I observed and what I learned over time was it was the sum of the people that's greater than the individual parts. Easily said, very difficult to execute, particularly in early stage companies, and particularly with the very hyper competitive environment we have today. And that's creating that team culture, that ability to attract people through some of those intangibles, which is empowering the individuals that you bring together. And that's what I wrote about. Some observations, some of the insights around some of the practices that I observed over time on how to create that team culture.
All right. I'm going to leave that there for now. Again, we're going to do a deep dive in the next interview we do together, but let's move on to Steelhead Ventures. So you mentioned you're working on this company for now, I think 8 years or so, or a little bit more. Tell us more about the company.
Yes, that was a really very unique partnership, in this case with Gary Arabian, my brother, and we were able to put together and leverage my background in technology. He came from a completely different background. He wasn't in the tech sector. He was in commercial real estate. But we put together an early stage fund with a very specific foundation that said, let's make a bet not just on technology, but on people. And so we had a criteria that really allowed us to try to assess as best you could. And believe me, you know the statistics in early stage investing, that if we could find an alignment, the right values with the right vision around technology, that we would make an early stage investment. And typically that was seed stage. So it was before the more formal growth funding that occurred. And we were able to leverage relationships with some of the leading accelerators like Y Combinator and the Alchemist Accelerator that I worked with for years. So that was the vision. That's what we executed. And really, it was very active from the, I'd say, 2014 to 2017 were the most active times we had there. And then I stepped back into an executive role.
I know you're betting on people as well, so to speak. Or investing, and I should say, in cultivating, of course, because they're real partnerships. But what are some of the things that you look for in founders or co-founders when you're kind of evaluating a company or making a decision?
You know, extraordinarily gifted founders have a gift of often intelligence, right? But it's the humility with which they carry that intelligence is what we look for. And what do I mean by that? You want a very forceful and very profound vision, but you want it also that aligns to a degree of humility where they don't need to be in the front of the room all the time.
Yeah.
So we look for a combination of insights that are based on a founder's experience. Now, what do I mean by that? Oftentimes, you'll have founders with a relatively strong technical background, but not having been in a sector for a period of time. What we tried to do, and it was very challenging, is to invest in founders that had a really good track record or at least experience in a particular sector. Mm-hmm. So building is one. Construction might be a good example of that. In one of the companies we invested in, EquipmentShare, the brothers were that we invested in were in the business for, I must have been 25 years. So they brought a great deal of insights. And then from there, created a vision around what's possible.
Yeah, that's great. And I look at this and I like asking that question because I know there's a lot of founders, a lot of entrepreneurs and executives that watch this and they're looking at, you know, what is that thing? When, because obviously there's the technology side, there's then that's going to you know, that's going to vary, right? From the funds directive, from what you want, what you're looking for what niche. I mean, that's going to be, you know, very different for each founder, each company, each investment fund. But like, I feel like some of those attributes and some of those characteristics and some of those things, I feel like that for somebody like yourself and your brother, I mean, being in the business, you know, having your experience, that's something that, I mean, is that trainable to be able to find that? Or is that just something that comes with experience?
I think it's a combination. What we often found to your question was that having and this is fairly well known in the valley, if you will, having a business and person that's more acute on the business side combined with a more technical founder was an ideal match. Now, that wasn't always the case, right? But having a counterpart where you have a very astute technologist and also a very astute business person, but not just around executing growth at the cost of, you know, hiring the right people or making the right decisions. You wanted an experienced business person that brought the ability to build teams as well. So oftentimes that was the right combination that we looked for, but it wasn't always the case. And so we learned the hard way, like many people, is that sometimes when it's just pure technology or pure, if you will, business side, that has to be a combination of.
Now, I know, again, every deal is going to be different, but I do ask you this question broadly, intentionally, to kind of get a feel for where your head's at when making a decision. But what are some of those key factors, you know, founder aside? Of course, we mentioned the founder, we spent some time there. But what are some of the other key factors in making a decision when you're evaluating a company, if you're maybe going to take that next step in evaluating the deal?
Well, I think it's the ability to be able to have some of the attributes, which is the ability to be intentional through what we will anticipate ultimately is the downturn, right? So it comes down to the very intangible conversations or that or about their experience with family or friends or what's their background. And oftentimes those are the attributes that will get a founder as you begin to understand that for them, it's everything about integrity or it's about family or it's whatever their priorities and values are that will get them through the hard times. So oftentimes it was a judgment about the intangible qualities, not just the tangible ones. Does that answer your question?
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. And so I guess just maybe taking it a step further, when you found that maybe you have the right, you know, founder slash situation, like how do you go about, like, I'm just curious, how do you go about building that relationship of trust? Because I feel like there has to be so much trust between the founder and also, you know, who's investing in the company.
Well, I think that's... unlike maybe a more traditional fund that goes through multiple stages of funding from the A through the B, the C, we were making the early stage investment, right? The very initial investment. So oftentimes what we tried to do is either through my background on the, if you will, growth or sales execution side, try to offer as much counsel or insights there as you could up front. I think that was really critical for us to try to lend a helping hand as an early stage investor in ways that would help them make decisions around growth, what market or who to hire or those type of things. But I got to be candid, early stage investing by itself is more around building the relationship initially that you would trust them to take that trust that you gave in them to other investors that they will bring on board down the road. And they oftentimes never, and this is, comes down to the character, they often rewarded you for that initial trust. Just to be clear, early stage investing is not about following it all the way through the different rounds. It's that initial bet on the founders. So again, it's about trying to offer as much free or helpful advice. And oftentimes that was just ongoing conversations.
You know? I get it. And that's why I asked that question, because if you were like carrying it through multiple rounds, then I feel like that trust factor would be a little bit different. But specifically when you're working with maybe, especially based on what you described, many times your investment may be the initial investment. And for that founder or that co-founder to take on those assets, I mean, that can be, depending on their original plan, right? That can be a leap, right? If that wasn't their original plan and they're hitting this growth phase or something else that causes them to need that capital. And now they have that kind of that dance, right?
Yeah. Well, it's also very challenging for founders as they go through the various growth stages to keep that in mind in terms of who were those early backers. But, you know, for the ones that did, we truly were indebted. And I would say that was really a judgment about them as people as much as it was about their vision.
What are some of the either sectors or markets or just what in technology is like exciting you right now? Like what gets you fired up? I mean, you've been in the space a long time. You've seen a lot of deals. You've seen a lot of different trends in the market. Like, what gets George excited today?
Well, I think as the market has matured the way it has, I think, you know, the anticipation of, and where I was from a sales, if you will, or from an executive management point of view, it was the combination of the early artificial intelligence that allowed you to do predictive modeling. Which is that you could actually, based on the right data inputs, could actually predict with fair degree of accuracy what the future would unfold, how the future would unfold. But that was really during the heyday, I'd say, of 2015 to 2018, I think 2019. Not that artificial intelligence was really a, it's been around for a long, long time, but it really did a lot of maturing and excitement. So that was sort of the one phase of excitement. I think seeing the type of innovations that come from a company like Amazon, where rapid experimentation is encouraged, a relatively flat management structure, but the ability to rapidly experiment, but look at failure a little differently in the sense that failure is a function of learning and rapid learning is, and failure and rapid learning is a function of getting to success. So having worked with Amazon as a third party in my last executive role, I think that was really exciting to see that. The culture of innovation, the culture of experimentation. And Amazon, of course, this has been written about many, many times. But to see the way that they've evolved and kept to those, the true experimentation as a function of learning, and therefore, in some cases, encouraging failure as a way to learn what is going to be successful, was an extraordinary culture to observe and to be, if you will, interacting with. So that was exciting.
One of my favorite companies, Amazon. I mean, they, and I, obviously for many, many reasons beyond this interview, but one of my favorite companies. Well, George, I have to say it has been too long since our last interview. I know the next one's going to be coming up much sooner because of our upcoming book launch that we'll be doing together, and really excited to get this out there to our audience and our readers. Just have to ask. And obviously it's been great having you back on the show. So have to ask, what's coming next? What's up next for you? Like, what's next for you? What's next for Steelhead Ventures?
Well, I think for Steelhead Ventures, you know, the investment stage is really something that we did previously, right?
Yeah.
For me, it's really around looking to work with young leaders. And I'm really looking to try to execute that in multiple ways, to try to mentor and allow young leaders to develop. And one of the programs I'm participating in is the Emerging Leader Program with a company called Vistage. But yeah. I'm working with another chair on that program. And I'm also working with some of the youth services here in Sonoma County, where I live, and giving them visibility on what's possible. We live in a wine valley, what's possible in another valley called the Silicon Valley. So I'm doing workshops with some of the youth organizations here and giving them insights to the fact that many of the immigrants that have come here in search of work are already from entrepreneurial background. So just giving them visibility on the technology sector is another area that I'm spending time on, as well as giving back in other ways, like I said, in doing either some programs around emerging leaders, but also working with people that I think can really leverage, if you will, some of the experience I have on how to evolve their own leadership skills. So it's really, if that helps, that gives you some context.
That's awesome. And I love it. I mean, you've been blessed throughout your life to have, you know, many things come your way. And now it sounds to me like you're in turn looking at ways to be a blessing and to give back in other ways that maybe in the past you weren't able to, or you just didn't have that right niche at. And I love you saying that because, you know, many of the people that are watching this, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to give back, but one of the things that you mentioned is mentorship, coaching, consulting, so through Vistage and all these other things, and really just looking at how you can take your expertise and help others with it. I mean, I'm a huge fan of that because I think that really is. I guess if I would have said this 10 years ago, I would have been ahead to say that's the future of learning. That's the now of learning. Like us being able to connect with other individuals that have that type of, that have an experience or just have gone through something in their life that they can benefit from, that where someone else can benefit from hearing that story. Like that's the big part of what we're doing at Mission Matters, and a big reason why we are so adamant and so dedicated to bringing new content to our audience and our readers and our listeners, to make sure that they're learning from individuals like you, George, and many of the other great entrepreneurs that have come on this show. So that being said, if somebody does want to connect and learn more or just connect with you and your team, George, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, certainly LinkedIn is always a platform that is available, but certainly my email, you know, I just have a personal email, george@georgearabian.com. I certainly would be glad to answer any inquiries or connections there. But I think that's a fairly standard way of doing it, you know, either LinkedIn or directly through email. And I appreciate that, Adam. And I'm here to help in any way that I can too, around sharing that knowledge and experience I've been blessed to have.
Fantastic. And we'll put your LinkedIn link in the show notes and all that good stuff. So if people want to connect and follow up, they can. And speaking of the audience, if this is your first time with Mission Matters or listening to our program, we're all about bringing on entrepreneurs, executives, and experts and having them share, you know, their background, their experiences, their mission, of course, and why they do what they do and what can we learn from that. If that's the type of content that you're into or sounds interesting or exciting, we really encourage you hit that subscribe button because we have many more mission-based individuals just like George coming up on the line and we don't want you to miss a thing. George, pleasure as always having you on the show. Excited about getting this book out with you and promoting and bringing you back on. So for today, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you, Adam. Very pleasure to be here.